Hello, everyone, okay. And welcome to Linux Crazy Podcast. This is podcast number 47. In this podcast, we will be discussing VPNs and remote desktops. We're going to be talking about NX technology. It is a computer program that handles remote X window systems connections and attempts to greatly improve on the performance of native X11 protocol to the point that it can be usable over a slow link such as dial-up modem. And a virtual private network, VPN, is a computer network in which some of the links between nodes are carried by open connections or virtual circuits in some larger networks, as opposed to their conduction across a single private network. And I got a couple guys here to kind of help me out, and the first one I'll introduce is Russ from the Techie Geek Podcast. Hello, Russ.
Hey, Dave. Hey, Noel. How's it going? Thanks for having me on the show
good.
Today.
Good, Russ.
And the other guy I got here is Noel from Australia. Hi, Noel.
Hi, David. Hi, Russ. Good to be on your podcast again, David. I'm well, thanks, Russ.
And I'm new to this remote desktops and VPN stuff, so I'm going to have Noel kind of introduce the topic to everybody.
Okay, thanks, David. VPNs and remote desktops. So I have had a little bit of experience using both. Although strictly speaking, currently I don't really use a VPN anymore, but quite happy to talk about it to a certain extent. One of the things we need to sort of ask ourselves is what is a VPN or a remote desktop solution, and whether or not we actually need to use one. David gave us some very good definitions of VPNs and remote desktops, but simply speaking, what a VPN allows you to do is to create a network within a network, or create a network that transcends or goes beyond two networks. So VPNs are very handy for use within large networks, say within a corporation whereby you are a system admin, you need to do support on various networks, and so you create virtual network nodes on different servers or desktops or both, just so you don't have to go through the rigmarole of having to create or punch for a whole lot of ports within firewalls and the like that might be separating different networks. But perhaps a more common use for a VPN is the Road Warrior configuration, whereby you will have a network, say at home or in an office, and a road warrior would be somebody who's, say, roaming the countryside, like a salesman or a support person, who would be using a laptop and will be able to fire off a VPN connection to the office or network. And usually these will be run over an encrypted type connection, and they'll be able to log in or use services on the home network from a remote location. Generally speaking, VPNs will have something like a DHCP component in them, so that when you initiate a connection as a road warrior, you'll be served a IP address within a domain, within a subnet of the VPN, and you'd basically just use the network that's provided, that's available, as though you're actually within the organisation. So they can be very handy for road warriors out and about, no matter where they are in the world. As long as they have a internet connection available, they can log in to the home system and use whatever services are available that they need. Another another use of a VPN that is quite common is between routers across a unknown or an insecure networking environment such as the internet. So you'll have a VPN router on one end, say in a city like Chicago, a VPN router on another end, say in Seattle, and just traversing the internet between the two cities. And basically each router will have its own IP address, and they will connect by an encrypted link. And again, the two routers will and the networks that those routers are hosting will be seen as just one big network. So that's perhaps a situation whereby you want to connect two offices or a home and an office together. Another use of a VPN, remote desktop solutions are quite often interchangeably looked at as being VPNs, but they're not technically VPNs, I guess. A remote desktop solution would be something like what's commonly used would be RDP, which if all of us in the past who have used Windows clients are probably quite familiar with RDP. It's an insecure protocol which allows you to connect to another desktop that's remote. So you might have a laptop with an RDP, which will be able to connect to a desktop, say at home, which is serving an RDP protocol, and then you'll be able to display the remote desktop, as you will, on your laptop. So that's what remote desktop solutions provide. And as David mentioned, he's been able to set up FreeNX, which is probably the best freely available remote desktop solution. It's secure and it's fast, and he'll be talking about that a little bit more later on. Other commonly used remote desktop solutions, free ones would include something like VNC, which is common, something I've used quite a bit in the past before coming across VNC. There's another one that has sort of come up in the last few months or so. It's called 2X, which I believe is, I could be corrected here, so there might be some feedback, but I think 2X is something like an offshoot from NX, and it's designed to, support both Windows and Linux hosts, whereas NX tends to be more supportive of the Linux and the more Unix-type hosts. But I'm happy to be corrected on that because I haven't looked at the web page for it for a while. Other solutions would include something like Mikogo, which Russ on the Techie Geek podcast mentioned it, and that's where I heard about it first, and that's a great little tool. And there's many others around as well. There's probably a lot of listeners out there probably screaming and yelling different remote desktop solutions that they've used in the past that they'd like me to mention. A common corporate type remote desktop solution would be Citrix, whereby you'd set up Citrix hosts, which would be able to serve out desktops to various clients, both within an organisation and remotely as well in a secured environment. And I've used Citrix every so often, and that seems to work quite well if you've got lots and lots and lots of money to spend. But what I want to really focus on myself, if I may, is not even a VPN or a remote desktop. It's a simple way of just mounting drives remotely. And this is quite often enough for most people. If you are remote, all you want to do is have access to your files and perhaps even run a program remotely. And you want to be able to do it securely. And there are a couple of ways we can do it. The first way I've been able to do something like that is using Samba tunneled through SSH. And I've done that for a while, and that works really well. However, I don't want to really focus on that method because that method is a little bit slower over slower links. And here in Australia, we don't have the fast terabyte links that you do have in the US and Europe. No, I'm sure they're not terabyte links, but they're much faster than here. But instead, for the last 2 or 3 years at least, I've used SSHFS over Fuse. And this is a really simple and useful way of connecting or mounting remote drives across the internet, because it's secure. It takes advantages of the security of SSH, and it's quite quick. Well, I found it to be quite a quick way of moving files remotely as well. So what I'll do, I'll just quickly describe a little bit about how that works. Fuse is a an architecture, I'm not sure if that's the right word, but it's a kernel. It's something that can be loaded as a kernel module. It basically provides a foundation to mount file systems over user space, but it requires a kernel module. And since about kernel 2.6.20, but if not that, not far off it, the Fuse module has been available within the Linux kernel. So you can compile, if it's not already compiled in, I'm sure most distributions have it compiled in, but you can certainly enable it. It will be within the kernel if you do compile your own kernel. If you go to File Systems, and you'll find it under there, under File Systems and User Space. You can load it up as a module, or you can actually compile it into the kernel without any problem. Actually, I'm looking here, it was available since kernel 2.6.14. So you just basically compile it in, or as a module, and which you then load up when you boot your system. And from there, you just need to also install a couple of libraries. There's a fuse library, a libfuse library that would need to be compiled, or probably would be just a package in most distributions. Within Gentoo, you just basically emerge fuse. I think it's actually, you have to type in the emerge space, I think it's sys-fs/fuse, because there are a couple of packages with the name fuse in it, so you'll need to just be more explicit when you define it. And that will actually install the, the foundation for running SSHFS. The wonderful thing about Fuse as well is that it works similar to it's like a foundation library, which enables you to run a whole bunch of different file system or virtual file system types, for want of a better term. For instance, you can the one I use is SSHFS, which is really a virtual file system. It basically allows you to mount across any directory across a network, across the internet even. Other things too as well is that there are Fuse libraries for mounting Wikipedia pages. There's Fuse libraries for mounting Gmail mailboxes as well, so you can just copy files to and from your Gmail account just by simply mounting it. Also too, which is very popular, is there's a Fuse library for mounting ZFS partitions as well, because due to license incompatibility, which I'm sure most of us have heard, we listen to a number of podcasts, that you can't mount, or that the Linux kernel is unable at this point to support ZFS due to licensing restrictions. However, there's a way you can mount ZFS partitions using Fuse as well. So basically, once you've installed the SSHFS library and installed Fuse, it's basically to, I'll just bring it up on my PC here. There's a command you would need to run in order to mount the directory using Fuse. And I'll just bring that up in a second. The command is basically just SSHFS. And there are options you can use. The option that I use is minus O reconnect, which basically allows you to enable the system to reconnect if it does drop off. And then your login credentials as though you're logging into just using SSH. So you have your username at your server name, and then you put in colon, and then the path of the directory you wish to mount, the remote directory that is, and then space, and then the directory you want to mount to. So it could be, for instance, /mnt/SSHFS or something like that, depending on how you want. And then, of course, it will default to port 22, which is the SSH port. But if you use an alternative port number, you can just follow it up with a minus P space and the port number you want to use. And that basically allows you to mount your directories remotely, securely, so you can do your file transfers. I even, when I'm in the office and I want to listen to a podcast, and I've run out of podcasts on my MP3 player, I'll just mount my directory at home using Fuse and just stream my next podcast to my office, and my home connection is not particularly fast. It's a 512 down, 128 up connection, but it streams. It's not really a stream, but it allows you to play MP3s or fairly mid bitrate MP3s quite well without any issues. So that's what I wanted to talk about, because it's simple, it's very lazy. Like, Fuse doesn't, at the moment, as far as I'm aware, is not supported by Windows, but it is supported under Mac OS X. It's also supported under OpenSolaris as well, and the BSDs. But it's a very nice little tool, and one that I use every day and really can't imagine living without it in today's era of internet access and mounting, accessing remote systems and the like. So that's it, David. That's what I wanted to talk about, was Fuse. And if you have any questions, Russell or David, feel free to ask, and I'll answer them as best I can.
All right, thanks, Weirded Out.
I have a couple questions. I don't know how they will relate exactly to Fuse or not, but maybe you can give me some insight. I have a situation in my workplace where I would like to have some remote users remote in through some sort of secure tunnel and have access to some pretty graphical intense transfer, like being able to do CAD over the internet, as an example, 3D solid modeling, rotating that CAD model. I understand the FreeNX protocol is allowing for much higher intensity work to be done over slower bandwidths. Could you comment on that, Noel?
Yeah, FreeNX would probably work okay. Do they need to use OpenGL for the kind of work that they're doing, or
yes,
is it just 2D? Yeah, I'm not sure if FreeNX supports.
It would be 3D, and
yeah,
there could be, this could be done a couple of different ways. Right now, there's two users in a remote office that use Ubuntu Linux on laptop machines. One happens to be using an Apple MacBook Pro running Ubuntu Linux in Parallels. The other is using an IBM or a Lenovo ThinkPad, pretty new one, running Ubuntu. And at the moment, they're both using LogMeIn to connect to a workstation at our facility where they can run a number of different packages. The one that we haven't set up yet is SolidWorks, which is the solid modeling package. But they do log into our home facility and run the corporate ERP system, and by connecting to that client PC there in the home office, they're able to navigate around the shares on the network and, you know, do pretty much anything as though they were sitting right there in the home office. So the one thing that they can't do up to now is, based on this limitation, is running CAD. So I was wondering if you had any ideas about how to do that.
Probably, if they need 3D, I'm not sure if FreeNX will work for them, because I think that only will provide you with a 2D desktop. Something like a VPN, like LogMeIn, or even just mounting remote directories. I guess if they have the application sitting on their laptop, that's, you know, when they're at home, and they use something like a tool that allows them to just mount the directories and then just load the file onto their desktop or laptop. If the files are not too big, like if we're not talking about, you know, 15 or 20 meg files, or, you know, even bigger than that, then it might be workable to just mount the directories and just load the files into their CAD application and just run it that way. Another thing that I've been keeping track of lately is using something perhaps like VirtualBox, whereby you might have a VirtualBox server remotely, because now VirtualBox supports through OpenGL and 3D. So you might perhaps have a VirtualBox type server remotely, or rather in an office, and you somehow be able to connect to that remotely, because if it works similar to VMware server, which is what I use quite often, you'll be able to connect from a remote location, bring up the virtual machine remotely onto your desktop or laptop, and basically use it as though, similar to like a remote desktop type solution, but you're just cooking into a virtual machine. I don't know whether or not VirtualBox can connect remotely using an encrypted connection. That's something you'd need to investigate. But it's an emerging technology now whereby virtual machines are starting to support OpenGL and just 3D graphics. And I think that's something that might become usable perhaps in your environment not too far from now. Maybe something you can keep track of and look at for the future. But I don't know if there's going to be a simple way to just use a VPN because of the performance requirements that your guys will have to run CAD remotely.
When I was at the Ohio Linux Fest in October, there was a vendor there called No Machine, and they're at nomachine.com. and they were demonstrating a product similar to FreeNX, I believe. And the gentleman was saying that using the NX technology, you, as you mentioned in the beginning of this the show today, that you can use this technology to get a lot of work done over relatively slow connections or low bandwidth connections. But he was saying that over high bandwidth connections, you can use this NX technology to do pretty intensive stuff. And that's where my mind started wondering if I could use this technology to do something like 3D CAD. Because if I could, then I could really cut down on the number of user licenses I would need to purchase, because I could have a workstation with, in this case, SolidWorks installed. And then I don't normally have, in my situation, I have like 7 users that use SolidWorks, but of those 7, only 2 use it all day, every day, and then the other users just occasionally log in, use it, do what they need to do, get off. So I may not need to maintain all these licenses that I install on everybody's PC. I could have a PC, a machine somewhere where someone could log in, use that machine, get off, and then somebody else could get on and use it.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of No Machine, Noel?
Yeah, No Machine, I believe they are the special entity that supports FreeNX, and they use a lot of the FreeNX technology in their proprietary offering. You'll find that you've got FreeNX is licensed under the GPL, and there are some limitations, I believe, with it in terms of its functionality. And No Machine actually have another license for their product, but it's simply just using the core FreeNX code, I would say, and they built their offering on top of that. The actual client software, the NX client that you run from your laptop or remote desktop, that works with FreeNX. So if you download the No Machine client, say for Windows, from the No Machine site, and you have a FreeNX server somewhere, you can connect to your FreeNX server with the No Machine client. So they're all completely compatible.
Yes. I see on the No Machine website that the server is free to download and use, and it says free forever. So.
Okay. Yeah. But there definitely is a FreeNX is definitely a GPL release, and I don't think No Machine's version is under the GPL. It's, they'll give you a binary download. I think they'll also probably give you FreeNX as well as an option. But they supply with a binary download that's a proprietary one. Yeah, now one other thing too, with the No Machine version of the server, I think there's a limit. If to use the free download release of it, there's a limit as to the number of clients that can connect to it. I think it's supports 2 or 3 connections. And then you need to either purchase the full version or the commercial version, or perhaps use FreeNX. But that's something I just wanted to add in there, just in case you run into that difficulty.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, that's okay. Makogo, yeah, Makogo is a fantastic product, which, Russ, I appreciate you mentioning it in the Techie Geek podcast. We started using that quite a bit at work, managed to do demonstrations. And one of the wonderful things about Makogo, and I should start with, prior to using Makogo, we would use something like remote assistance under Windows, or if we were doing a demonstration over a Linux server, we would use something like VNC, and for remote clients to connect to our service to do demonstrations of our software product. The problem with using remote desktop or remote assistance or VNC or most other type of solution is that you need to open up firewalls, open up punch holes through your firewall, and in many cases the customer would also need to do the same. And quite often, and quite understandably so, IT departments are quite reluctant to allow holes to be punched through their firewalls. So Makogo seems to work over just a basic HTTP connection, which is fantastic because, of course, you don't need to punch any firewalls then. It's so simple to set up. It does require you to register with the Makogo, I guess, central server, which is the only downside from my perspective, but I guess you can't have everything. Because I'd rather have full control myself, but nevertheless, it works really well. So you just go to the Makogo site, you follow their instructions in terms of how to register, and then you basically just set up a meeting which everyone connects to, and then you can just simply allow people to view your desktop from a little program that you run on your system. And it's although Makogo was designed to run under a Windows environment, I've had no problem running it within Wine on a Linux desktop. It works perfectly. It didn't crash. It's very stable. It was a breath of fresh air, really, to use something like that. Although it is a commercial proprietary system, it works really well, and it would be great to see an open source equivalent of it come out sometime in the not too distant future.
Yeah, it's been wonderful for our corporation. We've been using it quite a lot. I was excited to hear that it runs under Wine because I haven't tried that yet, but I will definitely be using that. I use it in my organization just about every day. There's a few off-site consultants that we work with. We use Makogo to have online screen sharing meetings. And right in within my organization, I use it for remote desktop support, and I've used it also for friends and family. It works really great because unlike LogMeIn or even some Windows applications like Crossloop, where it requires the person you're trying to help to have they have to be somewhat computer savvy. With those applications, they'll have to go download an application, they'll have to install it. In the case of LogMeIn, it can be rather involved setting up the remote client. But with Makogo, there's none of that. If you want to help somebody, even if it's someone you've never helped before, you just tell them to go to Makogo.com. That's Mikogo.com. They click the button in the upper right that says Join Meeting. You give them the meeting ID number. They join your meeting. Initially, they see your desktop, but you change the viewing to their desktop, and then you request control, and they get a little pop-up on their window that says so-and-so is requesting to control your machine. They click yes, and that's it. You see their desktop. You're controlling their machine. It's great. And except for the fact that they see your desktop before you see theirs, that's the only difference from any other remote support software I've ever used before. So it's been working out great.
Yeah, no, it's good. And one other thing, too, about Makogo is that it runs, again, off an encrypted connection. So it's great in terms of that privacy and security. Although, of course, having to I don't know what happens at the central server end. It's a bit like log me in, just sort of that's the area of uncertainty, but at least to the rest of the world, the connection is encrypted. So,
in their most recent version, they added support for Skype. So now you can also do voice through Makogo, which is, you know, to hold online meetings, that's the full package at that point. Because you could do everything. You can even do video over Skype if you need it to. So,
hey, Russ, could you talk about Log Me In a little?
Well, sure. Log Me In, the free version, I've been using it for about 2 years now. I'm still firmly planted in two worlds here, the Windows world and the Linux world, and virtually all the machines I need to support are Windows machines. So with Log Me In, the free edition, you can go up to logmein.com and set up a free account. And then on all your Windows machines, you install a small client that runs all the time in the tray, basically making that PC or server available to you remotely. Then from the machine you want to connect from, and on most machines, this can be a Linux machine with Firefox, which is the browser I use most everywhere. So from Ubuntu, I have a machine that's running Mandriva 2009 that I connect from quite frequently. So this is really great to control Windows machines for free from Linux. And basically, you just open a Firefox web browser, go to logmein.com, log in. When you log in, you'll see the list of all the machines that you have access to there, and you just click the link to the one you want to connect to, and that's it. And it's really one of the features I really like about it over, say, remote desktop connection is that you're taking over the machine truly like if you were sitting there at that keyboard and mouse. If you've had a situation where you've logged into a server or somebody's computer over remote desktop connection, you know that it closes the other user's previously open session. If you wanted to, you know, suppose I had running at, in fact, this has happened to me in the past, where my backup software is running on a server at work, and I need to log into that server over remote desktop connection. When I do not get access to the Windows session that's running that. That's inaccessible to me. This isn't the case with Log Me In, and it's also why programs like Symantec's PC Anywhere were very popular, because you take over, I guess, what they call the console level access. As far as the server knows, you're really controlling its keyboard and mouse. So it works beautifully. Log Me In a few years ago purchased the previously free software called Hamachi, which I had used for quite a while. And Hamachi allows you to set up a VPN network of shares, similar to what Noel was saying about Fuse. And you can still get the older Hamachi free version from oldversion.com. And this is Windows software, but it's still out there. It still works. Basically, my understanding, the way it works is it sets up a private network between you and the machines that you assign, and it uses an IP range that does not fall in the normal set of IPs that we're familiar with. I think they all start with 5 dot whatever. And the first time you ever see that, it's like, this looks weird. But this is, in fact, the very reason that it works. It's on its own segment of the internet that is not accessible any other way. So Hamachi is very, very useful, especially for connecting to just files when you just want to get to files on remote machines.
Just actually looking at the Gen2 repositories in the portage tree, Hamachi is a package that still exists there. And there's a GUI for it called ghamachi. You've got ghamachi, which is a GUI, and Hamachi, which is just a command line version of it. So that seems to still be available.
Yes, I just logged into oldversion.com, and under the section of utilities, about three quarters of the way down, there's still the link to Hamachi, and you can get all the versions that were available prior to log me in taking over and making it a pay-for utility, and they still work. And they're very secure. It is a virtual private network. So I kind of got out of the habit of using it, though, since I started using LogMeIn Free Edition. The Free Edition of LogMeIn just works beautifully. The only difference is that I'm aware of from the pay-for version is the pay-for version gives you a file transfer utility built into the session where I simply get around this by connecting to the client and on that client firing up a secure FTP and transferring files like I would normally if I were sitting there, or in the case of just one file, we all do this all the time, is we email ourselves files, right? So if I need a file at work, I will log into my machine, attach it to an email, and send it to my home email address. So it's really not very inconvenient. Also, another thing you can do with the pay-for version is they make it easy to print locally. So if you're working on a document at work and you want it to print on your printer at home, you can just choose your home printers from the print selection and print at home. You can't do that with the free version, and also audio. So if you were playing, you know, some kind of audio file on your machine at work, you will not hear it through your speakers at home. So those are features that you get only with the pay-for version. I've never missed any of those features, so it works out great.
Do you need to open up any firewall ports to use LogMeIn?
No.
On your router?
Never. No. Just like Makogo, I've never had to open up any firewall ports ever. It's one of the real beautiful things about it, because I think like Makogo, the reason you don't is because there's a client application on the inside of the firewall making the request out and opening that tunnel, if you will. It's connecting up to the central server. So it connects up to the central server, you connect to it up at the central server, and therefore the firewalls never get involved as far as needing to open ports and stuff.
The only thing I did was I installed free edition of NX Server, free NX, it's under Gen 2, it's called NX Server minus free and X. And the reason I started looking into it, I asked Noel what I could use to, at my work, I wanted a way to log into my desktop here at the house, and he suggested checking out the NX server. So when I did the emerge search, there's two here, and one is called NX Server Free Edition, and the other one is called NX Server Free NX. And when I was doing my investigation to see which one I could install or if there was any documentation on either one, everybody was talking about NX Server minus Free NX. So that's the one I installed. The one I installed is 7.3 minus R3. And I thought it was going to be really hard by some of the documentation I was reading, but come to find out, something must have changed. The developers for Gen 2 had created a script that actually made everything really easy for me. All I did was I went ahead and probably didn't need to, but I did it anyhow. I went ahead and added a user just to use when I log in, and I went ahead and set all the groups in there that I would on my normal install. So I have a lot of groups. I have this user in a lot of groups so that I could make sure that I would be able to do anything that I wanted to do. And then once I emerged NX Server Free NX, there was a little post install, they call it eInfo, that came up. If you're using Gen 2, whenever you install anything, make sure you kind of keep an eye on for these post install little eInfo. If you miss it, whenever you install anything, it's a good idea to go to the log. It'll be under the portage logs, and it'll be e-log, and to check out to make sure, because a lot of times there's some pretty important little tidbits in there that you need to do in order to continue to make sure that the install works. So for this one, it was you run NX setup, and then a double minus install, double minus setup, minus no machine, minus key, double minus clean, double minus purge. And what that does, it does everything for you. It sets up the default no machine SSH key. And that's really all I had to do. The only thing I needed to do was go in and there's a file, I think it's called etc. NX node config. And all I had to do is change the SSH port that I use for my SSH. And that was it. Next thing I went in, I used the DDWart router. I really enjoy it. It runs Linux, but it's a great router. I do all kind of different stuff here between the VoIP and a web server, and now with this, and it's never failed me. And I go in there and all I did was forward that SSH port to my desktop here. And then, as Noel was talking about, you go to the nomachine.com download, and you get the NX client. And I think nomachine, what it does is, this is their NX Server Free NX, or the NX Server Free Edition is their open source one where they do the development on, and then they take whatever development from that one and then move it into their proprietary one that they go ahead and make some money on. But you can use this, the NX client is one's own Windows, or at work I run Gen 2 too from my laptop to connect home. And so I just downloaded it, I untarred it, and I went as root. Then you just move the whole folder that's created, is called NX. I moved that all the way over to user, and then I just CD to user NX bin, and then I ran the NX client. And first time it starts up, it asks you a few questions. And once you put your information in, it goes ahead. I use GNOME, so it went ahead and put a little icon on my desktop for me and everything. All you got to do is just click that, put in your password, and connect. And I really haven't had any trouble at all with it. It works really well. The only thing is, at work, I use a USB modem, and the speed is not that good. So the desktop, when it loads up, it kind of looks like a web page loading. Remember when we used to use dial-up? But once it's loaded, I can surf the internet and play music, and I can do anything on there, and it seems to be pretty responsive once I got it loaded up. So it's just the initial load up. So that's my little spiel. Like I said, I was really surprised at how easy it was.
How long do you cool. think it took you from Woe to Go, or Go to Woe rather, to set it up?
Yeah, it probably the Emerge only took maybe 5 minutes at the most, and then probably 15. Well, but I had to get to work the next day to try it out. But I tried it here at home in a matter of 10 minutes. Testing it out. I tried one of my laptops here just to make sure that I had it all set up right. And probably it only took a total of 10 or 15 minutes.
Yeah, it's good. No, that's what I like about all the solutions we sort of talked about today, is that they're all simple and fast to set up, and they're all, quite secure in terms of how they move the data across the network. So they're really good solutions if you're new to setting up remote desktop software or VPNs or just remotely mounting a drive. All of these solutions are really simple and a good way to get started. There are other solutions around that are substantially more complicated that I guess we could have probably touched on a bit today, but these probably cover 99 or 95% of what most people will do with some kind of remote solution. And they are very simple to set up.
Yeah, when I was looking into what I was going to be able to do, and I was thinking, well, maybe I need to set up a VNC. I have this book. It's called Linux Networking Cookbook by Carla Schroeder, and it's a very good book. And in there, she's got a whole chapter on OpenVPN, and I guess this is more for the enterprise level. Noel, you ever used OpenVPN?
I haven't used OpenVPN. I've used OpenSwan for a short while, and I've used it basically to try to set up a Road Warrior VPN connection between my office and myself and others in the office. I was able to set it up quite well, or quite easily. Not easily. It did take me a good part of a whole day to set it up the way I wanted to set it up. One of the nice things with OpenSwan was that you could actually, since similar to Russ's environment, I have most of the other workers do use Windows laptops. So to be able to connect easily using, for instance, just the dial-up connection that Windows provides was essential, rather than having to worry about installing another client on their system. So with OpenSwan, you can connect using the L2 I can't remember now, L2PT, I think. Russ might remember. But using a protocol that just basically Windows can support, just a remote dial-up. And that worked extremely well. But it was a little bit complicated to set up, and it's not something that I would encourage unless they're wanting a bit of a mountain to climb. But that's a good solution, and that works similar to a Hamachi, whereby it just runs off a TPP connection on the server, and it just basically serves out IP addresses like a DHCP to the client, the incoming client. And basically just establishes a virtual network between the Road Warrior and the office environment. So you could basically just mount things over using Samba, or just run applications, connect to databases, whatever you normally do within your own network, you can do using something like OpenSwan remotely. So that's a pretty good tool. I'd recommend that for someone who looking for something that's a little bit more corporate. I guess the advantage OpenSwan would have over something like Hamachi, which I think the free version of Hamachi, you still need to log on to a proprietary server somewhere. But the last time I used it, you'd need to do that. OpenSwan can be completely controlled within your own networking environment, so you don't have to worry about potentially having some proprietary vendor looking into your traffic. The other thing too, it runs over IPsec, so it's all very secure in terms of IPsec anyway, provided there's no vulnerabilities at the time. So it's a good solution. It's a good, I'd say, small to medium type business solution for anyone wanting to try that one. OpenSwan and OpenVPN are very similar products. OpenSwan actually, I can't remember the technical details, but it has like a kernel. It takes advantage of something within the Linux kernel. So it advertises itself, although it's GPL, it advertises itself as being faster than OpenVPN, which is why I lean towards using OpenSwan. Now, OpenVPN could be easier to set up. I don't know. I've never actually had attempted it. But OpenSwan apparently is meant to be quicker than OpenVPN because it takes advantage of something kernel side. So that's why I leant towards giving that one a go. But I was able to successfully set it up and connect to it using both a Windows and a Linux client, so it's well worth checking out.
All right. I want to thank Russ from the Techie Geek Podcast, a.k.a. Russ W., and Noel, a.k.a. Weirded Out, for their help. If you have any comments or questions, you can reach me at david@linuxcrazy.com. Also, Russ, Noel, and I can be found most days on IRC. The server is Freenode, and the channel is #LinuxCrazy. Make sure to check out Russ's other podcasts at thetechiegeek.com, and also he does the DistroWatch Weekly podcast. The links to this information will be provided on linuxcrazy.com. Later.